You are listening to Inform and Connect, Conversations on Blindness and Low Vision, a podcast of the American Foundation for the Blind. And now your host, Melody Goodspeed.
Hey, everybody. This is Melody Goodspeed. Welcome to the Inform and Connect podcast. I am hanging out with my colleague and partner in crime, Tony Stevens. Tony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Melody. Doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, I really enjoyed our conversation earlier about our hangups with, our bloopers with packaging. Could we call it that?
The navigating in sometimes an inaccessible world, the headaches that you have, which I know is a big part of our conversation, didn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it is. And you just went traveling and shared some with me. But like, when it comes, it made me think about, like, for example, you know, one day I was home by myself and I was feeling really excited about, like, I wanted to get the bathroom cleaned really badly. And I'm like, oh, yes. Okay. I've got the scrubbing bubbles. Like, these little guys are like, great. You know, I remember the commercial for when I used to be able to see it. I'm like in there and I'm like, wow, I'm not feeling so hot. And then realize I have cleaned my entire bathroom with carpet cleaner because the bottles are the exact same. I mean, come on. So there's my blooper for cleaning. What about yours? Do you have one you want to share?
Well, I mean, I'm sure your bathtub, though, had that new carpet smell, which I love.
I mean, well, yes.
That new carpet smell. Yes. No, yeah, look, I mean, we live in a world sometimes that throws us inaccessible things or things that we don't know what that, you know, mystery. You know, what is a, like a mystery shopper, but in real time. Yeah. I was just traveling recently. I love traveling because there's nothing more exciting than, you know, staying at the hotel. They spoil you with, they give you everything you need.
Right.
And there's nothing more grand than lathering up your hair, ready to start a new day with meetings. And then you realize you just lathered it up with the lotion from the wrong bottle because they never let you know which is which. So that's my common headache in the packaging world, or just the world of, you know, the guessing game of what is this?
Yes.
What am I about to drink? What am I about to eat?
Yes, I agree. You know, and you know what? I bet you your hair stayed stable the whole day in that same position.
Oh, so yeah, I was going for a greaser look from the
1950s.
Well, I mean, like an old 50s movie.
Yeah. I mean, bringing Grease John Travolta back to action right there. You know, and just to add to that too, really quick, before we bring in our guest who's gonna, you know, talk to us about this, and which I'm super excited to have, one of our new trustees and dear friend of AFBs is, you know, I have a friend of mine that can totally perfectly see, and except if she doesn't have her glasses on or if she's just really tired in the morning. And she called me one day and was like, oh my gosh, I just sprayed my hair with air freshener. So it's just not us, you know. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, universal design and systems change and all of these things is what we're going to break into today as we talk to our new guest with us. I want to introduce to everybody our very new, one of our newest board members to AFB, Victoria Watts, and she's done so much within, you know, product packaging, and we're going to dive into just what it's like to be a trailblazer and not someone that just says, hey, you know, this isn't working, but someone who actually gets in and does something about it. Victoria, it's so good to have you.
Hi, Melody. Hi, Tony. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me today on your podcast.
No, it's our pleasure. I mean, you're it's exciting when we talk about some of the headaches the blindness community faces on a daily challenge, you know, when the world is not universally accessible. But yeah, it's great to have you on, not just because you're sort of an innovator in that space, but you're also, I mean, it's a personal connection. There's a real reason as to what's motivated you. And we'll look forward to chatting some about that as well.
Yes. So I'd give us a reason to know that Victoria and I are friends, and I'm a mom. I have a 6-year-old daughter, and she has a really cool little son. Can you tell us about, you know, what kind of brought you in as a mom and in the packaging industry? And can we talk about, you know, just kind of the things about being a mom?
And
absolutely.
And the unique situation around being a mom in this case.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the mom to 4 wonderful children, and Cyrus is my youngest. He is now 7 years old. And at about 4 months old, we learned that he was born blind due to a rare genetic eye condition. And, you know, at the time, I knew very little about blindness. I actually really didn't know anything about blindness. I don't even think I had met a blind person up until that point. And, you know, it was devastating to me as a mom. It was terrifying. And, you know, I think what was most troublesome for me was not so much his disability, but the barriers that exist in today's world that would prevent him from fully like experiencing and participating in life and being independent. And that was frightening for me as a mom, because, you know, I had done this before. I had three older kids. I knew the drill. This is my fourth child. This is going to be easy breezy. Mm-hmm. And then life threw me this curveball. And it was the first time as a mom, I didn't know what to do for him. I didn't know how to help him. And that was probably the worst part of it at that time. And, you know, I started to think about things I had never thought about before. One of which is how he would be able to distinguish one product from another. How would he ever be able to bathe by himself? How would he be able to go grocery shopping without assistance? How would he be able to do his personal grooming? You know, things that, again, that as a sighted person or as sighted people, we take for granted. And understanding or having my eyes opened to those challenges that this community faces, I wanted to change that. I wanted to, you know, find a way that I could give the independence to my son and the rest of this community to be able to experience and enjoy products independently and safely.
That is awesome. And
a little bit about, just that feeling of if he was 4 months, where did you go to try to find support? Were you able to get any kind of community to tap into, or anybody else, you know, like local agencies that sometimes serve? But I mean, you know, a lot of people focus on school and stuff, and 4 months is, that's a development.
Well, I started, you know, I'm the type of person that it takes me a little bit to feel comfortable enough to reach out to various communities. I was at that time just really dealing with the acceptance phase of learning about his diagnosis. And so I just, you know, spent a lot of time doing my own research, and I did it in steps that were comfortable for me. You know, it was interesting when I first learned of Cyrus's diagnosis, and I, you know, started reaching out to a few, you know, close people in my life, and everyone said, you need to join this blog, you need to join this group, you need to do this. And to be quite honest with you, Tony, I wasn't ready to do that. I had to do it in my time. I had to do it in a time that was comfortable for me. And I feel like for any parent going through something like this, it's important to do it at your own pace.
Right.
You know, it's important to do it at your own pace and be ready for those conversations. And it took me, I'll be honest, a while to be ready for those conversations. And as I started to do some, you know, research, I came across American Foundation for the Blind. And I was connected with Kirk Adams, who was the CEO at the time. And we had a lovely conversation. And, you know, being someone that was born blind, like my son Cyrus, he was really able to give me some great, you know, insights. And also he connected me to Melody, who's a dear friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And we instantly hit it off. And she too was able to give me insights into the world, the beautiful world my son could have. I mean, just looking at Melody, and, you know, you're a mom and you're a great mom and you have kids and you have this beautiful life, regardless of the challenges that you face. That to me was inspiring and so needed for me to move along on this journey.
So we talked a bit about the, you know, early on in this podcast about like the packaging and some of the physical things of inaccessibility. You shared the frustration as somebody, share a little bit about, I guess, your career. So folks know, you know, that your mindset sort of was gravitated towards something that a lot of people don't even think about until maybe they're, you know, left without electricity during a power outage or something. But talk a little bit about maybe your background and what got you into, you know, the products industry and you know, that mindset.
Yeah. So at the time of Cyrus's diagnosis, I had recently launched a skincare line called Victoria Land Beauty that I first created to address my own skincare issues. And having that skincare line and coming to the realization of the struggles that people with low vision face when you're navigating, a world of products packaged for the sighted, essentially, I thought, all right, well, there's got to be a solution to this, and I'm going to find the solution. If it's not out there, I'm going to create it, and I'm going to implement it on my skincare line as a proof of concept. And that's really where developing the Cyrus system of Ray's universal symbols originated from, was identifying the need and also having my skincare line to be able to demo as a proof of concept for this symbol system.
Like, one of the exciting things we get so often are people that come to us with ideas, right? You know, they maybe don't have the resources to bring the proof of concept to life. But, you know, the idea that there are people out there that are kind of makers in their spirit. Did you always have sort of this maker spirit? Like, you obviously saw a need for a product in the world and said, I can give the world something. I can make something, right? Mm-hmm. Has that something that always existed with you since a kid? I think it's such a wonderful skill set to have when we talk about conquering barriers to access, life in general, life lessons in general, sort of that maker's mindset. Did you have that growing up, or what fueled that, you think?
Yeah. So I think looking back, I've always had that innovative spirit, but I've always had ideas, but I've never executed or never followed through with any of those ideas. And I'm not really quite sure why. Maybe it was life, maybe it's just having kids, or, you know, just life. But in this situation, this was my son. This is going to impact my son's future. And this was so important because it did personally impact me. And knowing that I could contribute to my son's life and do something to create a better, more inclusive future that is what has fueled me to spend the last 5 years developing this system and raising awareness. And, you know, when one door closes, it doesn't matter. I keep on moving forward because it is so important. And I want a better future for Cyrus. I want a better future for this community. There should be a better future. There should be a more inclusive future. We as a society should do better. And, right. You know, having a son that is impacted by this is, there's nothing more powerful, Tony, than a mother's love for her child. And that is what fuels me to be a doer, to actually take action to create systems change.
And, you know, one of the things to add to that in watching you and go through this journey was how you did it. And I think that's so important because sometimes we try to do things because we think that we know, not really fully understanding the community's full need. You didn't just come up with those symbols on your own. Can you kind of talk us through how those symbols started to be born and how you engaged the community?
Yeah. So, you know, going into this, I knew that in order for me to come up with the most effective solution, I had to bring in the community that I was designing for. That much I knew. And, you know, I as in looking at other products that have been released in the market, you know, that have added Braille to their packaging, understanding that less than 10% of this population is able to read Braille, I thought to myself, how are these companies then coming out with these products and putting Braille on their packaging? Don't they realize that they're now excluding 90% or maybe more than 90% of the community they're supposedly inclusive of? And that really was frustrating and kind of confusing to me. I'm like, how are these companies not, how do they not know this information? And so understanding that the reason they don't know this information is they don't work alongside the community that they are trying to be inclusive of or designing for. And that's an epic fail. Understanding that, that was very important for me to work alongside the community, because as a sighted person, I can guess what your challenges are, but I don't live it on a daily basis. So I needed to understand what those challenges are. And then during that process, I learned, it was so valuable because I learned so much. Not only just, you know, the right height and size of the symbols needed to be, but also the reliance on QR codes and barcodes, but the struggle is that oftentimes barcodes and QR codes are not embossed. So even though they have information that's very useful, it's very hard for someone with low vision to be able to locate those
if
they're not embossed.
You're preaching to the choir on that one.
Yeah, so that was a huge takeaway for me. And again, further emphasizes the importance of working alongside that community, because I had done this on my own, I would have missed that. I would have, you know, the symbol system wouldn't be as useful as it is without the help from the low vision community.
Right. And I have to say too, also it had with the Braille, I think what I really enjoyed about the product when I used the QR code for the raised QR code when the products was also seeing like everything, like how much it cost, what do I combine it with, like all of those things that you just can't fit in Braille on a package. I think that, right, you know.
Mm-hmm. And for the sighted user, like myself, being able to scan a code and get all that information is way more convenient. And it's a much better product experience than trying to read the fine print on these packages. I mean, especially with beauty products, the print is so tiny. Mm-hmm. It's impossible, even with my readers on top of my contacts these days. It's a struggle. So just having an easy way to access that information benefits all of us.
Well, just the idea of the raised QR code, because QR codes since the pandemic have become just
a thing.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And
oh, they're everywhere.
Yeah. And the idea of, like, I hadn't really thought of that myself. And is there any sort of body, like, I know there's like ISO certifications and things like that, that manufacturers and people sort of adhere to towards, you know, guidelines, best practices. But that seems like that would be a brilliant, you know, having something as simple as even just a raised QR code in our world would make it hugely accessible. The idea that we know where to find information, you know?
Right.
And
then when you scan it, to know that it actually reads it and isn't just pictures too. Yes.
Exactly. No, I totally agree with you. The barrier for that, unfortunately, or at least that I've come across in all of my conversations with CPG companies and beauty brands, is the cost to emboss a QR code. And, you know, it's frustrating, but I feel, you know, we are making progress in this area, but I feel like this community is so misunderstood. I think the disabled community in general is very misunderstood. And it comes down to, with brands, is it worth the extra cost to emboss a QR code or add an emboss symbol to our product packaging? Is this community worth doing that? That's really what it comes down to, unfortunately. And my whole argument there is, this doesn't just reach the low vision community. This benefits everyone. Everybody can benefit from an easy to use tactile symbol system on packaging and a raised QR code. It's going to create a better product experience across the board, because really at the end of the day, accessibility benefits everyone.
I was going to say, that kind of throws us into, you know, Tony and I were talking earlier, and also with you, Victoria, like this whole concept of system change, breaking barriers. I think, you know, your focus is really systems change in products, but systems change is so really hard for people to kind of understand, and how important it is to break down barriers. But to your point, when you do that, you're opening a whole new world for everyone. What does it mean to you when you say systems change?
It means that changing the way things have always been done. So in this instance, in packaging, we have packaging requirements. Any product that goes to the market have certain packaging requirements that have been set. You need, in order to launch a product into the marketplace, you have to have things like directions for use on your packaging. You have to have a barcode. You have to have, to sell in Canada, you have to also have the product information or the product name in French. You know, there's just various requirements that you have to have. My idea is to create a world where accessibility is a standard, not an option, on packaging. So by rewriting or redoing the current packaging standards to meet the needs of this community, we can essentially create systems change within the packaging industry by changing those requirements to include the CIRUS system, this tactile universal language that I've created for packaging.
So I love that you mentioned that, you know, the driving catalyst for this was just the love of a mother. You know, Melody, you're a mom as well. I'm the son of a mom, but I'm a parent as well too. Like I have not experienced any more stronger advocate oftentimes than that of a parent, because just blind or not blind, you invest so much into your child's life. I mean, it's the hardest job people can have is parenting.
Yes.
Are there other areas that you can think of in CIRUS's life that, you know, when we talk about systems change, just how, you know, the whole thing is kind of broken, or that it's a mass issue. Like I think of the QR code and I think of how much, you know, airlines used to provide like Braille on the airplane as the warning stuff, you know, the safety instructions they would give to you in Braille. They don't really do that so much anymore. But I mean, it could have just been a simple QR code. But then the question is, well, where's that QR code? Like something, a simple solution that could be fixed. There's a cost to it, obviously. And our job is to make the case that the cost, you know, is a much greater benefit than anything that would be negative. In CIRUS's life, are there other areas you think of that are some other headaches, just as a parent, that he navigates through as a 7-year-old who is blind?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, accessibility. I think, you know, digital accessibility. I mean, things, obviously, these aren't things really CIRUS deals with right now because he's 7 and, you know, he goes to a school for the deaf and blind. So his school is very accessible. We also live in a place in Florida, St. Augustine, Florida, that is so accessible, which is something I feel like every city should model after what they've done here in Florida. But I, you know, it's so many touch points in life and that are a challenge and could be more accessible. I mean, think about, you know, all the different areas you could add audio that would make things more accessible for people that are blind and also make things better for me. I love to listen to audio versus trying to read anything these days because I am a slave to my readers. I have readers. I don't even know how many pairs of readers I have around my house these days. So again, using audio, I mean, is such a powerful tool to make information accessible for this low vision community, given the fact that less than 10% of them are 10% are able to read Braille. So there's tools that we have now that we use in certain, you know, areas that if we can implement that across the board is going to make things so much more accessible for everyone.
In the disability community, they always mention the curb cut. Like when the ADA came out and the idea that the curb cut was, you know, something that cities really had to spend a lot of investment, you know, to improve their cities to get these curbs cut. I mean, you still go, I live in Baltimore City where there's still some old streets and easy tripping hazards, but you know, the idea and the argument has been, yeah, it's made the world accessible for people, obviously with mobility impairments. But at the same time, people pushing carts, moms with strollers, like there's so many added benefits.
100%. Yes. 100%. As a mom, I appreciated that immensely.
Yes.
I mean, and if you think about it too, and that if this is, again, where this like lack of awareness comes from is, you know, there's so many things that have been universally designed for people with disabilities, but that we benefit from. I mean, curb cutouts are one thing, but audiobooks, text messaging, bendy straws. I mean, there are so many things out there that everyone uses on a daily basis, and they don't even understand that those things are actually created for people with disability.
Yeah.
That benefits us as well. So there's so much like people just don't realize the power of universal design. And if we just start as a society, as designers, as companies, as, you know, innovators, designing from that lens, that's going to make the world a more accessible place.
You know, I have one question I do want to ask you. Being someone who lived in a world totally sighted and then lost it, you know, one of the things that I have found is you know, of course, if I were to go up to you and say hi and start a conversation or be in a job interview or anything like that as a sighted person, you know, great, easy peasy, right? Walking in with a cane or a guide dog, it's crickets.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally, you and I have talked about this multiple times, it's due to a lack of, well, of education and quite frankly, fear. And what I love what you're bringing here to the table is the fact that you saw something through the lens of your son. You brought it for an entire community to make change, but not only a community, for the world. So you introduced the system change, but it took that first step of just getting into a community. And, you know, for a lot of people that are sighted, it is really kind of intimidating to go, and because they are afraid of, you know, well, say something wrong or that type of stuff. What advice would you give people that are looking, that want to hire, or people that want to do something different or to engage with the community? Because I think that's really important.
I'm sure Cyrus is a normal kid around the house, right?
Yeah.
Cyrus does everything that my sighted kids do. I mean, one of the things that I loved about AFB, and one of the things that really resonated with me from my first conversation with Kirk Adams, was your whole mission of no limits. And that has been my mantra, and I have made it, I don't set any limits for Cyrus. Cyrus learned how to ski back in March, brought him to Colorado. They had adaptive ski program. He learned how to ski. He loved it. We're going to, you know, that's something we're going to do every year with him. Cyrus rides horses. Cyrus swims. Cyrus does everything that my sighted children do. He just does it differently in a way that works for him. And again, I always, in any situation, always remember that creating a world of no limits. Because really what I've learned on this journey is it doesn't matter what disability you have. You can do anything an able person can do for the most part, but you just do it differently. And if the world was set up to be accessible and to allow people to fully participate, it would just make it so much easier. And instead of people having to make up, you know, like in packaging, for instance, making up your own systems for product identification, like bump dots or braille labels or scrunchies or positioning it in a certain place in your bathroom so you know where each product is. Instead of having to do those things, creating a solution, creating systems change to just make things easier. Because you know what? Being disabled is hard enough. To have to take that extra step to make your own accommodations is just not right. And it's not necessary.
I feel like that was a mic drop moment right there. And it's true. It's just not necessary. And
yeah, I mean, there are solutions out there that we can, you know, create if we just start thinking about, you know, designing things for everyone. Because the reality is that most of us will become disabled in our lifetime. And what kind of world do you want? Do you want one where you can, you know, fully participate and experience and enjoy your life? Or do you want to want one where you're left behind? Because right now, so many people are left behind or left on the sidelines. And it's just not right. It's not socially right. And it doesn't have to be that way. And, you know, by developing this universal tactile language for packaging, that's one less barrier that this community will have to face.
Well, I think it shows too. I mean, it's just innovation to help solve a problem. And, you know, I'm thinking of like in our own history at the American Foundation for the Blind, you know, there's a hip, cool hipster indie record shop right around the corner from where I live. And, you know, I have my kids go in there and try to read me records that they get very bored with. But it's, you know, the 33rd and a third record, which is like the standard record, that was really pushed out by AFB in the 1930s, like for the talking book, right? It was the idea that let's create something that will slow it down. So you could put more than just a 78 speed, these old records, you know, that used to play at 78 revolutions per minute. And they're like, well, if we slow it down and make it a little bigger disc, we can put so much more on. And then hence you know, birth of the talking book was sort of born at that point. And it's, you know, it's just, you wouldn't even think of it as something that was born out of a need, but we talked about the curb cut. I mean, I'd love to hear a documentary or, you know, experience a documentary or a good book. I'm sure there's hopefully maybe someone out there that's written it on, you know, all the times when we're forced into a corner and we have to try to find a solution to fix a problem, which is so much of a blind person's life. I mean, Cyrus will
right
up and yes. You just have to troubleshoot. You have to know how to get yourself out of the situation when you get lost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
But not having that fear, right, is mm-hmm. not letting it hold you back and be afraid of it. And that's such a
wonderful thing. And I think you're right, Tony. I mean, there's so many, like, again, people just don't understand the origin of the audiobook. They don't. And I think a documentary, honestly, on all of the things that are available to us that we use on a daily basis and how these were created and why they were created, I think a documentary would be great. Melody, maybe we can get Bill from LA.
Sarine
to put a documentary, because again, it's not that people are opposed
to
it.
Educated.
It's just they don't know about it. And it's not that people are opposed to the disabled community. They just don't understand it. And it's when you don't understand it, it makes you uncomfortable.
Right.
And when you're uncomfortable, you say things you shouldn't say. I mean, I've heard everything and I get it, because I said those things too, not knowing.
So have I.
Ableism, not knowing. I didn't know. Now that I know, I feel it's my job to share that with other people so that they are informed about it, because it's just a lack of awareness. It's not anything malicious. It's not, you know, but
right.
I feel like too, you know, the more we educate, the more we, you know, create systems change, we can normalize or take steps to normalize disability, because disabled people are people just like you, just like anyone else, with the same wants, needs, and desires. And I think historically, disability, you know, was looked at very negatively. You know, at least when I was growing up, like, mm-hmm. you know, it just the way historically disability, you know, was viewed. And we've made such huge strides, and disability now is such a, you know, big topic of conversation, which is exciting to see. But, you know, taking steps to normalize it and getting society to look at disability as, you know, something that can impact all of us.
You know, I think that the point that you're making here, because I want to go with this just a little bit, you know, you've done so much here, but one thing you have done, and I don't think people get this, it is, you know, at AFB last year, we launched the Helen Keller Dining with Friends, and you were our chair of that, and you held your own event, which was very intimate. But, you know, we talked afterwards about, you know, which was so successful. But can you give two really big takeaways that you came from your own event by educating others, either your closest friends, like some things that, like two of them, the high level of what that did and how that changed perspective? Because it was really powerful to me when you shared.
Sure. You know, the biggest takeaway from all of the guests that attended my dinner was, wow, came into this dinner not knowing much about this community. I certainly didn't know about AFB and the great work they're doing, but I can't believe that there's such a low unemployment rate for this community. I can't, it's upsetting that there's a, you know, a low unemployment rate, and also that there are all of these challenges that exist for this community that we never thought about. We never, you know, as sighted people or fully able people, we never thought about these things. And, you know, it was eye-opening, for lack of a better way to say it, to these challenges that this community faces.
No, definitely. I took a trip once to Israel, and Jerusalem's like, what, a 3,000-year-old city? So it was kind of built a little bit before the ADA. But I had a fall and ended up in a wheelchair there. And you don't realize it. You're like, oh my God, I can't get around, even with friends trying to help and stuff. It's just like when you're in somewhere that is, you know, still, you know, I mean, it's a historical preservation place, Old Town of Jerusalem, but I mean, it's, you know, I think just magnifies the reality that you don't realize it till you experience it personally,
right.
But it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That there's chances that people can have a chance to, even if it's experiencing sometimes tangentially, that at least can create a little bit enough focus to, for people to be like, oh, I get that. That makes sense. You know, if you pay an extra nickel or whatever a cost may be for a manufacturer to do something accessible, it's really, really changing the world.
And vision loss is a spectrum. I mean, most of us, I think the latest statistic I read is 85% of people over the age of 18 have some vision loss in the United States. And also in the next, I think it's next 20 years, they predict that 55% more people will experience vision loss. And now with the you know, aging population is the biggest it's ever been. I mean, this problem is getting bigger.
It's not going away.
It's not getting better. It's getting bigger for sure. Mm-hmm. And this is something too, like for, to get people, to get society to realize that, okay, vision loss is a spectrum. You may not be medically blind or visually impaired, but vision loss is vision loss, right? And it can impact your daily life. It can impact certain things that you do. But by creating a universal system that everyone can use, it reaches just a broad audience. And I think it's getting people to honestly like realize, okay, I'm part of this community too. And relate to that, you know, mm-hmm. get people to realize that they are part of this community too. And if they're not part of this community now, the likelihood, according to the World Health Organization, that they will be part of this community in some way, shape, or form, this vision loss community, in their lifetime. So we need to start thinking about that and preparing for that and designing for that.
And we talk so much about aging in place is a huge conversation compared to people as they get older. Because, yeah, people are living longer, and that just it's just part of the human composition to have gradual vision loss, more significant the older you get. But it helps people stay in their homes. I mean, it has a huge cost benefit of, you know, on a system. We talk about systems, you know,
what's right.
across the whole system of just life and end of care life. People able to stay at home compared to going into a nursing home where they maybe need
right
hands-on care is an enormous cost.
And just to throw this in here, you know, think about people that struggle, like have learning disorders, dyslexia, foreign language speakers also. You know, these people can also benefit from an easy to use universal language packaging language, because that's also a struggle. So you're bringing into the mix most of society, most of the population can benefit from that type of systems change.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
and then one other thing I wanted to point out, because just as you were talking about your the curb cuts, is you know, here up in St. Augustine, and this is a perfect example of a city that has been, you know, kind of universally designed in a way to be accessible for the low vision community, because there's such a big presence up here with the school. But you go to a crosswalk and you press that button, everything is audio. Wait. And then it has the countdown. Everything is loud and it's audible, so that person knows exactly when to cross the street, when to wait. And again, as a sighted person, I like that. I prefer that, because I'm busy doing something, at least I'm hearing. So that is just a perfect example of a very simple way to make crossing the street accessible and better for everyone.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I just had a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday who can see, but he goes on walks a lot, and with the sun setting, he can't see the lights. So, and then how many times even do you think when I was driving, where you have that glare, like if you could see, like if you heard that, you would have the confidence. So again, universal design, folks.
You don't need to be lazy. Design. Just rely on our eyes.
Yes.
Looking at their phones at the intersection.
Yes.
All the time. And like, how many people are on a train looking at the phone? And if you don't have the audible announcement too, I mean.
Right.
Exactly.
We took Cyrus to. We've been taking Cyrus to Disney every year since he was probably about two or three.
Florida residency pass, right?
Yeah. And this year, though, we changed it up and took him to Universal Studios for the first time.
Nice.
And, you know, as I'm going through these rides and I'm thinking to myself, you know, if they could just have an audio feature when we're riding these rides, like we were on the Hagrid's motorcycle ride, and you know, there is a little bit of audio, but just to even have a device that you could you know, pick up when you get to the park if you need that assistance, that mm-hmm. can take you through the park with audio, like you, as you're walking. I mean, with the technology we have, there's no reason why we can't do this.
And they have those at museums with their walking tours. I mean, it's transferable, yes, people.
Exactly. And I said that we had a gentleman that was kind of guiding us through the park. And I had mentioned that to him. I said, how come you guys aren't doing this? That would make it so much easier for people with disabilities, people like my son, but also make it better for everyone and in the aging population to be able to know and to get that audio description of what is happening on these rides. Because if you can do it at museums across the world, you could do it here too.
Innovative.
And it really would improve that experience.
Disney won several awards in the accessibility community around an app they put out that was the first time someone thought about it for audio description in movie theater. It would be on your phone, mm-hmm. and it would sync up to the movie and have audio description. I mean, Disney already has something that it would be just as easy to have it when you're waiting in line.
Right.
To ride or something, you know, where there's all the little, you know, you're in, you know.
When you're in the waiting game.
When you're in the queue.
We're in the queue. You know, Tony, I like brought that up. I don't know about you, like being a parent and a blind parent, but I, you know, obviously you and I and listen to audio description, we're watching movies, but I come down all the time and my son has it on. He's like, it just helps me concentrate.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was just saying that to someone the other day, because we've started with the Cyrus watch. We were watching the Harry Potter movie the other day, and I put on audio description, and it was great for me as a sighted person, because sometimes there's glare on the TV. You know, the Harry Potter movies are usually very dark and I can't really see what's happening. So it was able to give me what was happening without me actually being able to see it because of the glare on the TV, or I get distracted by something and, you know, I'm not really paying attention to what's on the screen. It's a better experience for me because I actually don't miss as much as I normally do when I watch a movie.
Right.
World where we never stop. It helps us. I mean, my mother would have it on, so she would be cooking in the kitchen.
Right. Or you have to get up and get your kid a drink or something spills, because you know that always happens. Yes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, Latoria, thank you so much for being here. We are so excited to have you as one of our newest board members. We're so excited to have you with us as we venture towards systems change and creating a life with no limits. Tony, do you have anything before we roll out you want to add?
I don't think so. I mean, other than how can folks find out more about, you know, the sort of the innovation you've been working on to try to advocate around, and then find out more about what you're doing, Victoria?
To learn more about the Cyrus system, you can visit cyrussystem.com. And to learn more about me, you can check out my LinkedIn profile.
Thank you so much. We've so enjoyed our time with you today. We look forward to more. And you know what? I just want to say personally, thank you so much for all the advocating that you do, for having such a strong voice, and for just not settling, and for taking charge and making a change, because, you know, a mom's heart and love is truly a change maker. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for having me and for giving me the opportunity to share my story and share the work that I do and passionately do for this beautiful community.
Well, it's moving us all forward together, so thank you.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us today with Victoria Watts. We've had an amazing time. If you want to check out what work we're up to, you can visit afb.org. Again, thank you so much and have a great day. Bye, guys. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to Inform and Connect, the podcast of the American Foundation for the Blind. Be sure to subscribe and like wherever you get your podcasts. And check us out and even consider making a tax-deductible gift today. Go to afb.org. AFB, creating a world of no limits.